Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I'm John Burke, and with me from across the pond is Matt Hudson from whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Matt, you ready to spoil TMNT Mutant Mayhem?
Yes, sir. I've just taken a massive glug of water to make sure the pipes are ready to talk about the turtles. Yes, can't wait, JB.
That's right, folks. If you listen to our recent episode, we talked about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem, the newest animated film from directors Jeff Rowe and Kyler Spears, written, of course, by Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, and Jeff Rowe. And I think there's a few other names out there with written credits. And, of course, there's the origination of the property. But this is our spoiler episode. So if you haven't seen the film, stop right here, because we are going to talk about whatever we want from the movie. We talked a bit about the movie, but not so much the plot. And I don't know how much of the plot we're really going to get into here, but we are going to talk about anything we want. So if you haven't seen it, pause the podcast, go to your nearest multiplex, watch the movie, and have a great time because it's so good. Come back and listen. Actually, on your way home, listen to us talk about the spoilers. And you've been warned. So, Matt, is there anything specific you want to jump right into?
I mean, it's funny because, like you say, there's nothing in the story which actually kind of warrants like wild spoilers. We know the turtles. We know there's going to be a bad guy. It's what they do, obviously. Spoiler warning, nobody dies in terms of the good guys, but they were never going to. I guess a lot of the spoilerific side of it comes from the turtles when they first encounter Superfly. The plan is that they're going to take him down. April O'Neil is documenting their exploits in an effort to put it online, make the turtles go viral, so they'll be accepted by the citizens of New York City, who I'm led to believe are always happy and always welcoming, so I'm told, he says with a smirk. But upon meeting Superfly, and they realize he's a mutant, and then he has a absolute cavalcade of mutant henchmen, they're kind of, for a little while, conflicted in the sense that they've never met any other mutants. They've never had kinship with anyone or family, really, outside of Master Splinter. So, yeah, and a lot of the spoilers then come from there. Obviously, they then make the decision to not go ahead with Superfly's plan to make this contraption he's using, which is going to wipe out most of humanity.
Yeah, and one of the things, though, I think is spoiler territory is, but not in terms of plot, but in terms of reimagining the turtles, right, is the ooze in the old movies, the implication is they become human-esque because Splinter was a pet to a human, and so when the ooze hits him, he becomes more human-like, and because Splinter was with the turtles, they had that human quality. That's the same thing with Baxter Stockman becomes a giant fly, Baxter, because he was a human who was around a fly, and he gets mutated. The ooze on him. Yes. The change in this is that the ooze just turns animals into mutants that happen to be humanoid, but in varying degrees. They don't necessarily have, like, Splinter was not the pet of a martial arts instructor in this version of the story. They learn martial arts through YouTube, like any respecting citizen does today. Yes. And, Superfly is not Baxter Stockman. It's implied that Baxter Stockman is dead, and that the fly that he had started mutating, and all of the other mutants Baxter had intentionally grown, are just animals who have become humanoid. They are not like a cross of a human and an animal. It is just a mutant.
And they kind of think it simplifies things as well, don't they? They don't. Well, Splinter even says, you know, I absorbed the ooze, and he was, because he was older, he became an older mutant, whereas the kids, the babies are babies. And he's like, well, it makes sense when you think about it, which was funny. But these mutants have to grow. It takes 15 years for them to grow. And that includes Baxter Stockman's creations, which include Rocksteady and Bebop, of course, the legends. Leatherhead, played by Rose Byrne, or voiced by Wingnut, voiced by Anastasia Demetriou. Then you've got Mondo Gecko introducing Paul Rudd, killed me when I saw that. Post Malone as Ray Fillet and Hannibal Buress as Genghis Frog. So big names in the voice cast, but
yeah,
they change it up a little bit, but it makes sense.
When they announced all of this voice cast, I was really worried, because anytime we've seen a superhero movie where they overdo the villains, it's often really bad. Or even like going back to just three villains, like in Spider-Man 3, it's like, oh no, what have you done? It's too much. You can't really build a story. they actually do a really great job of building the story with these mutants. They are, I think they're leaning a little that there's some familiarity with the audience, but at the same time, they're like, well, they are a family, and we get the idea of family, and we get they're a little odd. Superfly is the alpha, and everyone's kind of going with his lead. And then there's this whole great debate about, like, well, we've never really thought about what we wanted. And characters who you've only ever seen as henchmen or villains get to have a kind of an existential crisis and debate what they really want from life. It kind of starts with Gecko, because Gecko isn't a bad guy, but he's doing, you know, he's working with Superfly. And there is this, I really like how they play Splinter and Superfly as the yin and yang of the perspective of humans. Both are anti-human, but they're coming from very different reasons. And that is, the Turtles are kind of in the middle of both of them, because they're like, no, there are good humans. We are so interested in the human world. We want to be a part of that world. So you get a little bit of the Little Mermaid vibe, right? Like, they want to be part of your world. And I just think so much of that really works as a story. Where I think the film loses some steam is the third act becomes a kaiju film. Again, the film cast mentioned it as, they compared it to Ghostbusters and the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. I actually think it's closer to Ghostbusters 2, because the New York citizens have to step up and help the Turtles, and that's more familiar with the second movie, in my opinion. Spider-Man 2, when he saves the city with the subway, and all the New Yorkers rally around him, and they're like, we'll protect your identity. I think you get a little bit of that at the end of this film. And that part's the good stuff, but like the giant kaiju monster fight is a little, you know, it's a little bit tropish from the MCU and the DCEU films, like where we have to have this epic battle. I think it gets to it naturally. It doesn't feel crammed in, but it still feels like, I would have liked it to stay a little bit more low key, because the Turtles this is their first mission. It is low key for them. They're not prepared. Again, I think they do a good job with it, because I actually think they make it, the Turtles would have lost if not for all of the help, right? Like, that's the big part of the message of the film, and I think they nail that. But when it started, I was like, oh man, I wish they weren't going this big with it so early. Because like Super Shredder is in the Super Shredder is in the second movie, right? You have to top your first movie, so it works in that regard. It doesn't work, it's actually pretty silly, but it's, you know, it works. And that, like, I think they maybe going with Superfly so early, like the Superfly, is, I wish they hadn't. But again, I don't think it doesn't work. I just, it feels maybe like too leaning into that plot structure that we've seen with the superhero genre. I wish they hadn't gone that far with it. Again, not a real complaint, just like one of the few nitpicks that I have. It stopped it from being a 5-star and a 4.5-star for me on only one viewing, though. So maybe the second viewing, I won't have that gripe.
Yeah, I understand you, my man. I remember saying to you off air that animated films can almost get away with it a little bit more, the kind of big OTT-ness of it all. But I totally understand your point. I think it's, they play by their own rules. They show that if you come into contact with this ooze, that, or this substance, that you are going, this is going to happen to you, and you're going to grow exponentially based upon your own genetic build at the time, makeup at the time. And of course, because he's surrounded by so many superflies, surrounded by so many other life forms underwater, and horses, which is always good fun. I know you would have enjoyed that. So I get the reasoning behind it. I think it plays to its own rules, but yeah, they did go really big. But I like that they didn't make the Turtles overpowered. They weren't gods by the end of the film. They like you said, they were done for if it wasn't for the citizens helping out, and that felt right.
And similar to mutants.
The other mutants. And I think that was also telegraphed somewhat in the first time the time when they betray Superfly, who just prior to that, you know, really menacing voice performance from Ice Cube, when the Turtles said, like, hypothetically, what if we don't want to go along with your plan? And Ice Cube kind of drops down a tone, and you think, oh yeah, this guy means business. But they when they steal the contraption from him, the device, the nuclear fission device, and the chase through the streets of New York happens, or the back streets of New York. But you get Mondo Gecko and you get Wingnut, who are basically saying, look, you've got one chance here. He's not going to be as nice as we are. Just give it over. You can kind of see a chink there in their armor, where they're not, they're subservient to Superfly, but they're also saying to the Turtles, listen, just give it up now, because this guy's crazy. For your own good, please stop. And then later on in the film, when they do turn and they're like, well, maybe we don't want to kill humans. Maybe we don't want to be the bad guys. Kind of see it in that moment in the middle of the film, which I thought was quite a nice little setup for a nice big payoff at the end. But there's a moment when Superfly is this massive kind of whale fly horse object, and his voice just goes really slow, and he turns around and he said, you thought it would be Godzilla? Nah. But the way he says that is perfection. I mentioned it on the non-spoiler, I was in tears both times. Second time I was waiting for it. It's just the way he says it, it's wonderful. You have to listen to it if you haven't seen the film, guys. Sorry, we spoiled the whole thing, but that bit had me crying. And most of the dialogue I enjoyed. I heard beforehand, not from yourself, JB, from others who said they weren't really a big fan of the dialogue. And I thought It is in tune with teenagers, whether you're a turtle or a human. It felt right. There was the Avengers Endgame comment I thought was a little bit too kind of, that, I don't know, it's not even recency bias. It just felt too OTT and too specific. I was like, I don't know, I'm a fan of that one, but... The way they spoke, like you referenced, they speaking over each other, they were fighting and squabbling a lot. That felt right. And dropping in like modern colloquialisms, it's no different to what they were doing back in 1990-91, well, between 1990-93 with the OG films. They had words and expressions of the time, like cowabunga, come on, a bodacious, rad, awesome. Things that maybe not awesome, I say that. But they were saying things of the time in those films, and it was just accepted. In the Bay films, there are terms which probably are more of that time as well. I don't see that why that's such a problem, that now it's, you know, people are using these phrases and it doesn't work for everyone. This is just how kids speak, and I love the fact that they went in with that. They went in with teenage kids to voice the turtles. It made such a big difference. I thought Ayo Edebiri as April was so good. April, I puke. I thought that was funny. I want
to hover with April for a second.
Mm.
Throughout the history of the turtles, April's always been a love interest, but always, like, obviously not like a real love interest, but like the turtles collectively have always liked her.
Yes, Casey.
I thought it was a bold move. Yes, and then Casey. Which Casey's missing, so get ready for the sequel. especially after the way they integrated New York into this one, because there's going to be a guy who I think will be inspired by the turtles as a result. Yes,
100%.
And I don't think we've mentioned the Shredder tease at the end, so there will be a Shredder in the next movie. But April and Leo. Leo is the one who is the most infatuated with her. Like, all the turtles clearly like her, but Leo is the one who sees a possible... In fact, before he sees April, like, kind of pines for this idea of finding love. And, you know, I don't think we're going to get Shape of Water or anything going here, but it is interesting because, again, Leo's been kind of the most vanilla, bland character throughout the franchise. Because he's the leader, he's the hero. I think Johnny Knoxville voiced him in the Michael Bay first one, at least. I don't know if he was in the second one. I might be wrong on that, but I feel like that's right. And
I think so.
So, yeah. Like, giving him that element, I think, made him, like, less of a narc or less of this, like, goody two shoes, less of this teacher's pet. While he is that, and he's still, like, he's the one who rats him out to Splinter, which I love when he says, don't use that word that way. Hilarious. I thought that was a really good choice because it made Leo again feel a little bit more relatable than he has in the other instances.
I wonder if that was a conscious choice as well, that Leo is always kind of seen as the Nard, like you said, Leo has always had that reputation. So to give him the kind of quasi love interest, maybe that was a conscious choice, because, you know, Seth Rogen loves the turtles, so maybe he kind of took that on board and thought, well, let's make Leo something a bit more than what he's been before. But I think she's great. Ayo Edebiri, I think she's very cool. Let's not lie, we're talking about love interest, JB, you know, Splinter and Scumbag the Cockroach,
they're
gonna make some ugly babies, I'll tell you that right now. But that was fun, even right up the top when Splinter says, look, I've been on dating apps, there's not many mutants my age out there.
Yeah.
It felt very funny, and then playing on towards the end, and everybody in the theater collectively kind of went bleh when Splinter and Scumbag decided to have a proper kiss at the end. Yeah. Even second time around, even my kid was like, ugh. I was like, yep, I know, that's a cockroach and a rat. What have I done taking you to this? But so those interactions are funny. I also thought it was nice that the creators got a nod. You had the Eastman High School, Eastman High, for Kevin Eastman, and you had The Laird, which was some sort of hotel, I think, which they're on the rooftop on at the beginning, which I thought was a very cool nod and homage to the creators. But you know, I like the humor, JB. As we said, the story is by numbers, the story's fine, but I like the camaraderie, I like the voice cast, I like the script and the dialogue, I thought it was fun. I think we mentioned that the action choreography, the old boy-esque scene, is wonderful. It's one of my favourite scenes of the year. And the first fight, like you say, was so dopey, but so well done as well. I really, really enjoyed that. I enjoyed those two more than the final fight, but I like the fact that they lent into that Turtles lore of, it's a bit like Ghostbusters, where it's a love letter to New York, essentially. And at the end, the citizens of New York rally round. They help Turtles, they defeat Superfly, so we think. And everything's great. You know, they're at school now. They're at high school. They're at the prom. Everything's brilliant. Donnie's found his people, just geeks on laptops. And Mikey's in his improv class. And Raph's wrestling. And Leo is investigating with April. So I love the fact that they wraps it up nicely. But then, yeah, the post-credits scene, TCRI are still after the Turtles. That's obviously TCRI. You're going to remember Techno Cosmic Research Institute. They're the guys who created all the bad stuff. Cynthia Utrom is the baddie here. She's kind of the chuckling puppeteer of it all. She's voiced by Maya Rudolph. But she says, you know, we can capture these turtles easy. That ain't a problem. But we need somebody. We need to bring in the big guns. And that's where, like you said, we get our first look at Shredder. And do you know what? I thought it was a really cool way to introduce him. A bit like they kind of how they introduced the Joker in Batman Begins, except this obviously is an actual visual cue. We see the guy. But I love, we just see over his shoulder and he's just looking. I was like, do you know what? That's an excellent way to introduce the biggest antagonist of them all in this terms of this franchise. And the Casey Jones thing you mentioned, sequel, which has been greenlit, sounds like it could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really hope so. And again, there, I haven't fact checked it, but the idea of a series with this iteration of style, I would be down for. It might bring me in where I'm actually like watching a cartoon series, which I've not, outside of like the adult cartoon series like Invincible, and I can't think if there was another one that I've recently watched. Invincible is the only one coming to mind, but I watched that, but I haven't watched a kid series for a while. And I assume this would be a kid series because this film does feel like it's geared towards a younger audience. I would probably watch it because I really like this iteration of the characters.
Yeah, man, same here. So, I really, really enjoyed it. It's not an awful lot I didn't like. In fact, it probably wasn't anything. It's easy to look at the story and the plot and think, oh, it's shallow. It is, but that's fine because everything else makes up for it. It thunders along. The pacing is great. The jokes are fun. The team is earnest. They're authentic, and as you said, they feel like a team. The squad of mutants all have their own distinct personalities. I enjoyed all of those. I thought the bad guy was fun, and the animation, which we went into more on the non-spoiler, was fantastic to look at. So, JJB, I had a blast with the Turtles, Mutant Mayhem.
I agree, and I can't wait for the sequel. It's one of the rare times where I'm like, yeah, all right. I think they have a goal with the sequel. I mean, they clearly do. That's one of the things. They called their shot at the end with Shredder, so it's not like we're getting a sequel just because it's doing well. They have a plan for this, and I obviously lots of history to pull from. As much as they threw in this one, I expect to see now that the other mutants are free to make choices. There, some are going to make bad choices. I expect Bebop and Rocksteady to probably, you know, decide, hey, you know what, crime is fun, and that's what they'll do. You know. But maybe not. Maybe they'll say good guys. Maybe it'll just be like a big mutant army fighting Shredder or something. The Foot versus mutants. Who knows?
I'm here for it.
Yeah, either way. But folks, that is our spoiler review of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem in theaters now. We do both highly recommend you check it out and help keep movies like this getting made because they're great. Next week, we're going to be talking about Meg 2, The Trench. Can't wait. In the meantime, follow us on social media. On Instagram/threads, Bloody Awesome Movie Pod. Where are we on Twitter?
We are at BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast.
Facebook, you can search Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. Individually, you can follow me at BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms. Matt, where can they find you?
whatiwatchtonight.co.uk and just search What I Watch Tonight across all the socials, including Letterboxd.
And if you like what we're doing here at the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, we ask that you just rate and review. Give us that 5-star rating on whatever podcast catcher you use to listen. It helps other people find the show. With that, we encourage you to keep watching movies.
And stay bloody awesome.